see that goal, watch those scenes. That is Ryan McLean. Hello and welcome to season 2, episode 2 of the Same Old Wombles. The Same Old Wombles is a totally independent, unfiltered weekly podcast featuring today 4 football fans talking passionately about the team they love, namely AFC Wimbledon. I'm Mark Lewis, short of voice tonight, as will become apparent from last night's shenanigans. And today I'm joined by Adam Proctor, Matthew Cooper, and recent birthday boy, Niall Cooper. Happy birthday, Niall.
Thank you, Mark.
So,
I'm very young.
You are indeed very young.
Where's your shirt, Niall? I've gone out of my way to get a bespoke Wimbledon shirt made for him. Where is it?
Those people will see that shirt on display on Saturday. It will be there in full glory for every fan, Wimbledon fan, to come and watch and see my shirt. That's one of the major reasons to go. Go and buy your ticket, get on the site, buy the ticket. Let's make it sell out so you can see my new shirt bought for me by my wonderful brother, Matt.
Thank you. That's all I'm looking for.
Fantastic podcast material, obviously.
And Mark, great. I'm pleased you're back to normal form, doing some nonsense. And that chant for McLean, yeah, that you've just done there, that was sung widely, was it? It's not just something you've made up now and are trying to peddle here on the podcast. That is an actual chant that the fans have actually done, isn't it? It's not you.
No, it's not, because the goal was scored as late as it was. I have to credit Ray Armfield, the Kent Womble, for that one. And my apologies if he then sends a lawsuit my way about it. Because he put that onto Twitter last night.
There was a lot of things going on Twitter last night.
We'll get on to that on Friday,
so it's not last night. It's the night last night.
Yeah, but, we are recording the night after the Coventry Cup game, and we're going to review the Coventry Cup game and, of course, the Grimsby game. What are the hopes and fears that we have for the Wrexham game? We have another view from the North Stand. I did a little interview pre-season, actually before the season started, with a guy called Matt Jones, the racecourse Ramble, who's a Wrexham fan. And for the first time, because they weren't around last week, we have the odd one out round for everybody on the pod in season 2, episode 2 of the Same Old Wombles. Welcome. No one doubts the way you feel. No, your passion's very real. I must say we're all impressed. Approach this test. The days have gone when football clubs live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game, and tough decisions must be made. Cool.
So, then last, who was at the Grimsby game then?
Nope.
Yeah. No. Moving swiftly along.
And I what?
But you know
I
what? It. Adam was watching the Grimsby game.
Yeah, I watched the Grimsby game. It was really good. It was really good. I was impressed.
How could you watch the Grimsby game legally, Adam?
Oh, because...
The legally is the important word you mentioned.
Well, if you have a VPN and you appear to be in another country and you pay your €11, you're allowed to watch it legally. I've paid to watch the game and I appear to be watching it from Germany. That's how you do it.
I'm not sure you should be admitting on something that goes out in public about doing illegal nefarious acts.
But using a VPN is completely legal and paying to watch a game of football is completely legal. So...
Right. Okay. I'd just like to say, my lord, that we weren't part of this. This is an Adam thing. He speaks independently for himself.
So let's do this game by game. We actually started at Grimsby with Bass in goal, Carrion Brown unavailable, injured. So we had Johnson playing left back, who is a centre back. We had Joe Lewis, centre back with Pierce, who is, as we know, dependable, but slow. Open doorway, right back. Midfield was Nerf Gun left, James Tilly right, Armani Little and Jake Reeves in the middle. And Omar Bugle played up front with Josh Davidson, I believe. And then Ali came on.
Yeah.
That's right. Ali came on and then quickly created chaos.
Oh, it's great. I mean, for both games, the substitutions have been fantastic, actually. Bugle, I thought was amazing in the Grimsby game, actually. I've only watched the highlights for the Coventry games. I don't know, but again, it sounds like he's pretty good from listening to the Talk Sport stuff. Yeah, and I think the subs, yeah, Davison, he wasn't really doing anything in the Grimsby game, to be honest. And I said before half time, we should swap him for Ali. And I think my dad said, oh, it's a bit early for that. But I was like, well, I'd rather see some early subs. And he changed the game completely, which was really good, even though it was 0-0. So, yeah, and I was, and the Coventry subs yesterday, fantastic. Unbelievable. Like, timing, the personnel. It seemed really, really just suddenly the game changed. And, of course, I mean, Coventry changed. They had Haymar, who'd obviously been doing loads of stuff. They took him off. And that definitely seemed to change the dynamic of the whole game. It was like they were kind of hanging on that one player. So, yeah, I'm well impressed with two games so far.
I am loving it. I'm loving Mark naming the squad and Adam chucking in names of commentary players. I don't care. I'm intrigued that you remember these. Night, between you and me, mate, could you, off the top of your back, could you name our current squad? Could you name our team?
Yeah, I can name our current team without any problem at all. Right. Dave Besson, Mark Goodyear, Terry Phelan, Billy Jones, Eric Young, Andy Thorn, Alan Cook, yeah. Dennis Wise, John Fashnew, Laurie Sanchez, Terry Gibson. Was that it?
Yeah. That's it. That's the side. That's
did
the
he remember Laurie Cunningham?
That's the company side now.
I didn't mention the subs, Laurie Cunningham and John Scales, but if you want me to, I could.
Very good. Okay. You know what really encouraged me, actually, about Grimsby? I mean, let's talk about Grimsby briefly, because obviously it was a league game. They obviously had a number of new players as well. They had to start the season with a rejigged team, and we know that Ali is our main centre forward, but it does appear that they actually have a way of playing, as in it's not just hoof the ball up and hope something happens. They specifically know who's playing in what position, and even if those subs are made, then you've got people coming in similar positions to do similar jobs, which if they are quicker or faster, as we'll talk about in a little bit with Coventry, is just fantastic. Obviously, Grimsby didn't quite work out because Ali took one of the worst penalties seen since Kevin Cooper at King's Meadow about 15 years ago, which frankly was only bettered by the, have you guys seen this? The penalty shootout for Accrington Stanley in the second round, in the first round on Tuesday night. The guy from Accrington falls over as he goes to take the penalty. Sends the goalkeeper the wrong way, and then the goalkeeper gets up and runs across the penalty across the line and still manages to save it.
Wow. I've not seen that, but now I know what I'm doing this evening.
I've seen it. It was going in, to be fair. He hadn't missed the goal entirely. It just kind of was slower than John Fashnew's penalty against Luton in the semi-final in 1988.
Yeah, which gave everyone palpitations who was in the game at the time.
Mark, is there a system that we're playing at the moment, or is it, or did you notice any flexibilities? I mean, I've not seen the two games so far. We'll be there on Saturday. But what is it flexible? Is our structure flexible? Formation flexible?
So far, the formation hasn't been particularly flexible. It's basically two banks of four. But the key for me is that the two central midfield players are sitting quite deep. It was Reeves and Little on Saturday and Reeves and Ball last night. And they're sitting quite deep because they are encouraging the midfield players to bomb on. Tilly is very quick. Tilly was playing right wing in front of where I was sitting last night against Coventry. He could have scored a couple of goals early on. Sasu played really, really well left wing, actually. And again, Sasu impressed. I would not be surprised. I'd like us to get another striker, so we definitely have the option of four, but I would not be surprised if they keep Sasu, because Sasu can then be an option from the bench or from the start as a central striker because he's big and tall, and as a winger because he's quick. I wouldn't play him all the time, and I wouldn't necessarily start him ahead of Nerf Gun or ahead of any of the other strikers. but he's definitely agile enough. He reminds me a little bit of Carl Court, not sort of Bambi on ice type, but actually that kind of leggy type player who can surprise people with how talented and skillful he is. But essentially, you've got the two banks of four, then you've got a big lump, who was Boogle at Grimsby, and it was Pell last night. And then ahead of them, a good 5 yards ahead of them, will be the main striker, who will be Ali. Now, they are weaning Ali back into fitness. So he didn't play 90 last night. He only came on as sub. But he looked lean. He looked strong. He does still try and run down blind alleys. He tried to take on 5 Coventry players in one move last night, and funnily enough, couldn't. But they were scared of him because he's getting his pace back up and he looks sharp.
And do you think in that number 10 role, you know, where we got Bugle or Pell, could that be Josh?
No.
I'm just wondering about Josh and Ali playing together.
Well, obviously they did last season and it worked on a few occasions, like the Howager game when we came back and won the dramatic start. I don't think Josh is good enough in the air, to be completely frank, and he wasn't all the last season.
We did a look back on Josh and Ali, and when they played together, didn't we win most of those games? It was because they'd hardly played together because they were injured or not actually in the same squad at the same time. So it's like we've never actually had that opportunity to see them play together for a long range of time. What I do like, that all that said, is I like the fact that it feels now that we've got 4 forwards that actually could fit into any other place. And we haven't really had that since the season we went up.
Absolutely, agreed 100%. There's not a lot of point in lingering too much on Grimsby, apart from to say we lost there last season, we didn't lose there this season. That's one more point than we got from the equivalent fixture. So that's a positive thing for me. But what I would really say, if people don't know Boogle, haven't seen Boogle, is take a look at the first goal last night. Not just because of the fact that Boogle scored it, but because of the fact that actually it was a straightforward old school Wimbledon goal that John Fashanu, who already mentioned, would have been proud of. Zanath lumps it. Well, actually, he not even lumps it. To be fair, Zanath puts a sensible long ball in to the channel. Boogle rises 10 feet higher than anyone else, heads the ball inside. Davison wins it. There's two strikers playing together. Davison wins the ball, lays the ball out to McLean. Talk about him in a bit. He puts the first-time cross in. The Coventry defence have no idea what's going on, and Boogle rams the loose ball in. So if you win a header and then win the next loose ball, even against a quality championship opposition, let alone anyone in League Two, we know League Two teams can't defend, you're going to create chances. You're going to give yourself a good chance of getting on the score sheet.
I have to say, one of the pleasures, and Adam, you referred to it earlier on, one of the great things is being able to change the game so completely by putting on those 5 subs that make an impact. Because I think we're all aware towards the end of last season, JJ just obviously wasn't keen on doing those 5 subs. He didn't trust the players to come on would be able to make that difference. So now it looks like we've got that sort of a bit more depth in the squad. And even to a point now where, last at the Grimsby game, we didn't have a recognised left back. We had our man, was it Lewis who dropped in there?
Johnson played left back.
That's what I meant, Johnson. And then, so it's, it's great. It just feels like we've got a bit more strength so we can make those changes, and they're like for like, or they add a little bit more pace, a little bit more strength when needed at that time. And that was very apparent in the Coventry game last night.
Yeah, definitely. People were saying there's definitely like for like subs, but it did change things up massively, I thought.
What I would say was so encouraging about Coventry, I've seen people post this and I actually said it at the time, even if we'd lost, Zanath made some good saves, and that was probably his best performance in the Wimbledon shirt.
Some insane saves. It was like a double save and things. It was ridiculous. I've never seen him on fire.
But the thing was, we were going toe-to-toe with them. We were playing attacking, fast-attacking football. Sasu twice and James Tilley on the right wing. could all have scored in the first 10 minutes. Because we were attacking them, they were playing wing backs, as Wrexham will play wing backs on Saturday, and we were getting inside between the right sided centre back and the right back, and the left sided centre back and the left back. So there's space in. That's the way you play wing backs properly. And at the same time, what we weren't doing was working out how to defend against wing backs. So Isaac Ogundore, who a lot of people have a lot of time for, including myself, I said at one point he was being taught a bit of a lesson on the right wing. And to be fair, he wasn't. What was actually happening was Tilly wasn't getting back because he was bombing forward, which meant that Ogundore was being outnumbered 2-1. My daughter described it as being flayed alive on the right wing first half, which meant that they had a lot of possession. And Hamer, you already mentioned. I mean, we basically left Hamer. Hamer's probably their best player. He played so deep that at one point he played a 60-yard pass from inside, probably 10, 15 yards inside his own half, which landed on the penalty spot for an attacking move for Coventry, which resulted in a chance, which Zanac made a good save from. And we just didn't get anywhere near him, which meant that he could dictate the game. Fortunately, either because he was coming back from injury or because, frankly, I think they were just so arrogant they assumed they'd win without him, they took him off after about an hour. And we were chasing shadows for a bit because they were a decent team, technically. But we hung in there. We hung in there. Ball played central midfield, and he's a bit of a one of those aggravating characters if you play against him, in that he'll just get a foot in, he'll annoy people, he'll play give and goes. He was quite deep, but he was then, when we got a second win, second half, he was making attacking box-to-box runs, which is what you need from midfield. Jake Reeves, frankly, is a revelation, and we, you guys will see him on Saturday. He's physically the same player, but he's not playing the same way. He's so much more intelligent, so much more domineering, and so vocal as a captain. It's a great move to make him captain.
It's going to be interesting. I think Saturday is going to be a very interesting and different experience for us all. Because last night it was great at the ground. From what I saw, it looked brilliant. But Wednesday it looked brilliant against Coventry. Saturday is going to be absolutely rammed, isn't it? It's going to be heaving.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Saturday, I have to admit. It seems like we're doing a good thing. I mean, the thing I noticed as well, I don't know, maybe Mark could say, but when I watched the first half of the Grimsby game, I did think we were like defending way too deep and letting them come at us for maybe 20 minutes. And that definitely was a little bit weird. I don't know why we were doing that. But it seemed in the Coventry game, we were still playing the same sort of setup, 4-4-1-1 or whatever the heck it is. But we seem like we kind of came out from the get-go a little bit more offensive than the Grimsby game, in my mind anyway.
I think it depends on who the actual personnel is, because your specific options, you know, Ogundore, Biller at right back will bomb forward. Curry will bomb forward. Brown, not so much, but he was pretty solid last night, to be fair. Centre-backs, we've got Ryan Johnson and Joe Lewis, who played together at Stockport, one right-footed, one left-footed. They got a bit of pace amongst them. Obviously, PK is injured right now. And the only other option we have is Alex Pearce. Now, Pearce is solid, but he hasn't got the legs. So that probably actually answered your question, Adam, as to why we were maybe 10, 15 yards further back. Because Pearce isn't going to defend 20, 30 yards out from the halfway line, because he knows he's not going to be able to turn and make it, you know. Last night, Lewis, for example, gave the penalty away because Hamer had so much space. He was playing slide rule passes through, like Gerrard did in his pomp. But I don't see anyone in League Two doing that, to be honest. I guess Elliot Lee for Grimsby on Saturday will try and do that. But we were snarling, you know. Ball and Reeves were winning those tackles. And then Boogle came on. And Boogle's first contribution was, and to be fair to Harry Pell in preseason was anonymous and a complete shadow. But last night he was winning those tackles and he was doing a solid job in that number 10 role. And then he was tired after an hour or so. So Boogie came on. First thing Boogie did was win a 50-50, set the whole crowd up, and the rest is history.
And it's going to be interesting. So if we just looking now at things and you know, what we're all aware of is and why it's important to have these two players who can just drop in for each position, it's because we're not playing 90-minute games anymore, are we? You know, our games are going to be 100 minutes. That's what the games are going to be, and more sometimes. And the game against Grimsby, we were playing, I think it was 13 minutes injury time, and that's going to be the common thing. Now it's interesting. I'm not entirely sure about it personally myself. I was thinking that, you know, you have 90 minutes and then you have extra time where it's obvious time wasting. But if you're stopping the watch every time the ball goes out of play, so you get 90 minutes of play, so to speak, something or close to it, I just think games are going to go on for like forever. And cynically, part of me thinks people start to complain about it. So all of a sudden you say, OK, we'll reduce the game or we'll put the game into quarters. Do you know what I mean? So you get, like, I don't know, 3 20-minute or 3 25-minutes or whatever it is. So then there's more TV or yada, yada, yada. Maybe I'm a natural, what's it called, conspiracy theorist. Because it just feels like it goes on too long. But for us, that's why managers have all got to get that second squad. So you almost need to be able to have your first squad, which can go and run for like a solid 60, 65, 70 minutes. And then you bring on your five players that you can to give you that extra energy that will get you over to like 100 minutes, which is where we're going.
Rant of the Week, Season 2, Episode 2 by Matt Cooper. Thank you, Ben.
I'm not sure about it, to be honest with you. And I think if you've got all the facilities and everything you have in the Premier League and the top echelons of the championship, you can do all of this. But if you're not, you know, like this is, it's going to be exhausting for sides lower down.
Yeah, I don't know enough about all the new changes. But the time-wasting thing is always frustrating, isn't it? You know, so that to cut that out and to stop that from happening is good. I don't believe there's a conspiracy to turn the game into a different set of minutes, but maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, I'm up for cutting out time wasting because that does drive me mad. You know,
Who do we think is the biggest time waster in our team or our squad from last season?
Harry Pell.
Yeah, I mean, Pell needs to do a lot to win. Yeah. Pell needs to do a lot to win me over, so I'd say it's probably him.
It's always going to be a keeper for me. It's always keepers. You catch the ball.
Oh, that's true. When they fly on the floor,
you know, and you wait, whatever it is. And there's a whole thing, isn't there? Isn't there a rule that says you've got to get it out of your hands within 6 seconds, and that's never enforced? So enforce that rule. You know, if you're going to enforce something, to start, enforce that rule. Because then there's the whole thing about where you take the goal kicks from. You put it down in one area. Oh, no, I want to take it over the other side of the thing. But you're told to do that in this situation. Now, maybe that is going to change.
So two games I've watched this season, one being last night. And last night, for example, Pell, Brown and Zanef, who probably are three biggest culprits in that time-wasting regard, all played. And none of them time-wasted whatsoever. We actually played the ball on the floor from the back. Reeves came to get the ball off Zanef to play through the press because they were pressing pretty high and they were pretty strong technically. And there was no time wasting like that from either side, in fact. And the referee, again, obviously he's got his assessors there. At one point, Tilly was fouled, or he thought he was fouled, and he fell on the ball and basically picked the ball up because he assumed he was getting a free kick, which he wasn't because the ref didn't think he was fouled. And he was automatically booked. So all that type of stuff, you're adding stuff on. What really struck me in terms of the time wasting or the time keeping, we scored the second goal which again, great move, great ball over, beautiful cross by Oggs. And Ryan McLean, we'll talk about him in a second, but brilliant finish. But we scored on like 92 minutes and 30 seconds, something like that. They'd already announced there would be 6 minutes of added on time. Apparently, it's another 30 seconds for a goal. So at 96 and 10 seconds, the crowd's going bananas. Not only the crowd going bananas, three or four of our players, whilst the ball was in play, were pleading with the referee to stop the game, to whistle up for the end of the game. At which point, Coventry have another shot and Zanet makes another worldly save. And rather than celebrating or telling Zanet he's done well, they keep on going to the referee and asking him to end the game, which he finally did. And if you watch the highlights, the only person who's actually switched on and literally doing this, you know, focus with his head is Zanet. And they played 96 minutes and 45 seconds. So, you know, the timekeeping was exactly right in that particular regard. But the atmosphere, the finish by McLean. McLean is quite small. Paul McGee, I think, was the comparison that Matt may have made last week, and that's about accurate. He's only about 5'3", 5'4", but he's really quick. He has to be quick, otherwise you'd get bullied off the ball. 6 weeks ago, he was working as a recruitment consultant. It's a real old-school Wimbledon story, just like Vinny the Hod Carrier from Wealdstone or wherever we signed him from. Wonderful finish. And if you read the social media stuff, he's so excited about it all. And someone's already changed his Wikipedia page, or someone's already created a Wikipedia page for him.
It was an exceptional goal. Left foot volley, crossover. But he also set up, didn't he? Because he set up the first goal. So he made such an impact. It's great to see that. I mean, it's brilliant. I think academy-wise, we do brilliant. We do really well with young players. We're doing superbly. And you know, it was the Wimbledon way. It was always the Wimbledon way that we had players that recruited through and they did well and then we sold them on. And that's our model. And it's great to see that we're going back to that. And we are going to lose some amazing talent in a couple of years.
Quite potentially, but then if we lose some amazing talent and get a decent amount of cash for it, then we're doing well. But, you know, he's picked up Johnson and he's picked up Bugle and he's picked up Nerf Gun, for example, completely for free. He's picked up Ball completely for free. And these all look on small sample playing time so far, but they all look decent and they all look a distinct improvement. Somebody said to me last night, who played right back last season? And I generally couldn't remember apart from Huspiller, because he just wiped the slate clean in terms of, you know, who our poor defensive people have been.
And
the one big thing we've got to pay a lot of credit towards is Craig Cope, because this is Craig Cope's first actual full window, right? So he's had no chance to do that. So all the people that were dissing everything last year, you know, you've got to give credit to both Danny and Craig, because they're actually now, this is the first time I've actually had the opportunity to implement a whole load of things. On the trouble, and this is one thing I wanted to talk about, on the trouble that happened last night against Coventry in the South Stand, right? They had a remit to say no vapes and no smoking, which they've never actually enforced, and people actually sitting in their same seats. You know, I mean, that's like, if that's your remit you're given and people aren't doing that, then obviously the first time you actually impose it, there's going to be strife. What should have been clearer probably was communication saying that this is something, you know, proper signing saying this is what's not allowed, and made it very, very, very clear before, because that's what I think has caused the trouble. I think, you know, ultimately what they were given was a remit that makes sense. You know, you're not actually allowed to smoke in a football stadium. You're not actually allowed to use vapes in a football stadium. That's kind of like public spaces, general rules. And you're supposed to stay in the seat you're actually allocated, right? General rules. Because the issue they had was that some of those rows had more people in it than they are capable of holding. And that's where you start having a risk. So, you know, in a way, they were kind of it was inevitable that when the first time they've implemented it all, that's going to happen. So, you know, I've got a bit of sympathy for it. I realise I'm probably going to get lambasted for saying so, but, you know, that's where I'm kind of going.
I think you're right, and it makes sense in general to do so. As is always the way when you have any kind of authority figure, it's how you do something, the stance that you take. And I was sitting reasonably close by to what was going on, and it looked from afar pretty ugly, and it looked from afar quite confrontational from both sides, to be fair, which is a real shame because there's a decent game going on, and we were attacking that particular goal in that particular half. So you didn't want to focus on what was going on behind the stand. You wanted to focus on what was actually going on the pitch, because there was good stuff on the pitch and there was a decent crowd considering it's an extra game and some old days and everything else. What I'd like is, as Niall said there, the club need to own everything, whether or not it's the going cashless scenario, which we've discussed before, we'll probably discuss again. And the first time that was introduced last night, they did put public statements out about that. And obviously a lot of fans didn't see that because a lot of fans don't read stuff on the internet and social media and so on. And they only see stuff when they actually first come to the ground. So they have to have a signage. They have to make it clear. We have to make sure that we're catering in all the senses of that word for every type of fan, from the five-year-old that comes with their parents or their grandparents, teenager who's going to want to actually chant and possibly not necessarily sit down for the whole of the 90 minutes, the parents and the adults, and obviously the older people who do prefer to pay in cash. And that's a straightforward fact, however much people might not necessarily want to deal with it and may think that that's a way that's a particularly outdated situation. It is true, and that is the way of the world. And again, there's been social media discussions about that. The club is in a difficult position. Any club's in a difficult position in that particular regard. They have to be commercially sensible and do things that make sense and do things that are going to make the club money. But equally, they also have to own things. Danny has been particularly good, from what I've seen, even the first few weeks this season, in fighting fires on social media and different places. I wish he didn't have to fight any fires. I wish we actually came out ahead of these things, thought about what the concerns may be, and were actually proactive about telling people what to do.
I think there needs to be a common sense approach, though. I mean, I understand about the no vaping thing. I mean, I get that, but it almost needs to be like there's signage, and it kind of needs to be like, you know, word needs to go out in our first few games that, you know, like there's no vaping, and, you know, can you put it down and be like that, like so. But don't have to enforce, you don't have to go over the, don't have to really go over the top at that point, because you give people sort of warnings, and so the word gets around that sort of thing, and then you know, you go the next time and you go, look, I've told you now, please, you know, you need to put this away and stop it. And then you put stuff on social media, you've got the signage up and all of that sort of stuff. And maybe it needs to be a little bit, needs to be a sort of common sense sort of thing. I think the big, for me, I thought one of the issues was more around the fact that people were able to congregate in the area behind the goal and they didn't have tickets. So, and I, you know, people look at it and you look at that, area and you go, there's loads of space there, so you'll go in there because, you know, there's a crowd mentality, you want to be together. And if there's no one there enforcing the ticketing, if there's no one there at those gates, and that's what's happening, you come in for the main tickets, and then you don't show your ticket again, do you? You know, are you going through the main turnstiles, you don't show your ticket again, there has to be a sort of like thing of you going, okay, so. And for games like Wrexham and most of the league games, I think you will go to your allocated seat because there's nowhere else for you to sit. But on a game like last night, where there's obviously chunks of space, people are just going to congregate together.
Yeah, no, I think there's a couple of things there. I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly what was going on. And it sounded like there were some fans who were maybe heavy-handedly treated in terms of different things, whether that was someone said on one thing they had to bring in a bottle of water, and they'd explain numerous times why they had to have a bottle of water, and they kept being challenged about that. Someone said that their young son couldn't get into a section when they showed the ticket. I don't know whether any of these things are exactly true, but I think there's a couple of things here. or a number of things that are probably at play. I think you're right. We should probably err on the side of caution and sort of when we're introducing changes that maybe are not known. I mean, I kind of always assumed no vaping, no smoking was the number one anyway. But, you know, the no thermos flasks, the no bottles, the cashless, I think we should phase those in via announcements in the stadium for the people present. You know, okay, not everyone's going to be there and we've still got to put stuff online, but, you know, slowly bring those things in. And it does come back to an enforcement thing. Like, how strong-handed were the stewards in enforcing these things on one of the first games there where there may have been some changes? It sounds to me like they were overly strong-handed, right, in different ways. So I'm sure that will be addressed. And Danny Macklin has said that, you know, he wants to kind of feedback on that. I think he's a little bit too active on social media, personally, because I'd rather he just kind of wait and then just put... Because one of his last posts was really good about what they want to do and how they approach it, but it's like, just take it as a general post, because otherwise if you're talking to one person, it becomes an individual thing, all that kind of stuff. And then I guess the other thing for us is that, which I've got frustrated and I've got angry at in the ground, you know, we are owners, right? And when I, and you guys know, when I haven't been able to get a cup of tea at half time and missed any of the game, I'm annoyed. And I'm annoyed at the people serving and the people there and the people that are, you know, because I'm like, I'm an owner. You people are working for me, you know, and it's the same with the stewards probably. It's to some degree. Now, you know, on the other part of it, obviously, is like, I am a stickler for sitting in this right seat, and every away game I've gone to, every game I have a ticket. It tells you where I'm supposed to be sat, and that's where I sit. Right now, you know, so there might have been a bit of extra space, but that's a safe standing zone. So I don't know how that space works, you know, in terms of like who can come and go and how you can move around. You're allocated a space. You should probably stay there. I think the only time I've ever gone to another space is recently, actually, is in a pre-season Southampton game, because my son-in-law's tickets are too low. They're just too low to the pitch and I don't like it. So I went and sat a few rows behind. But you're talking about like a 40,000-seat stadium where it was a pre-season with like hardly no one in there. So maybe I was breaking my own rule there. But, I mean, for a game that's... You just go to your seat, don't you? You know, even if you're excited. I mean, it looks... I've seen the video behind the ground, behind the goal, and it looks mad, right? People are like... And I'm like, I would have liked that maybe when I was 21, but I'm like, I'm quite glad I'm not there now.
I think that's the point, though, Adam. Because I think that's the point, that you've got young people there, you've got other people there, and they like that. They like that. There's something about being in that crowd, in that mob together, all chanting, all being like that whole thing. I get why people do it, because there is a real buzz about it. And you've destroyed your whole argument by sitting in the wrong seat at Southampton. I'm sorry. That's the thing.
What is interesting is that there is actually a meeting of a number of 16-year-olds up to like 20-something junior Dons members who've put their names and themselves forward to get together. They're actually having a meeting at the stadium next week, I believe. And I'd be very interested as to what kind of stuff they put forward, because again, some of them are going to be, well, they're all going to be fans and they're all going to be season ticket holders in different parts of the stadium. Some of them are going to be, you know, children of people of our ilk, so to speak. We may well know, and they're going to have different opinions and different ideas and different ways in which they want to experience and enjoy the football matches. Different to what the rest of us as the same old Wombles crew with a little bit more grey hair would care to do, as Adam said.
But I think the thing is, I mean, you know, yeah, I changed seats in this one game, right? But I think, unfortunately, that's the seating is the seating, you know, and unless they've got some way of managing that and saying, okay, we haven't sold out as many spaces in this section, we can move people around, then they can move. But we all know what happens when people are put into the wrong spaces in grounds, and we know why we've got safe standing. You know, it's really, the safety of a ground is so important. We know that. So I think that
I think this is a unique problem to the Coventry game. I think this is a unique problem in a where there was space and it was exciting. And that, and then people moved together. You're allocated a space that is where you're meant to go. But it's difficult when it's not been stewarded properly. And I'm saying what happens sometimes is you have stewarding after the effect. So, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on, and then you're trying to get in there to rectify a situation rather than at the beginning if you had stewards. And it's going to be that stand is going to be where any issues happen, our home stand. So that stand, you almost need to have another steward who checks tickets as you go in to make sure that you're going into the right area.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, in terms of like, you know, the pictures were like, oh, the stewards are in with the crowd again. It was, yeah, it's like, they shouldn't have got to the state where you're having to send stewards in unless there's a fight, you know, or something. Yeah. Not overcrowding. No one should be in the stand that is overcrowded. They should have been checked on the way through. Now, like you say, Matt, when we walk in, we come in one bit and we can pretty much walk anywhere we want. And I don't want that to change because I enjoy being able to walk around and see other bits, but I go back to my designated seat. And you're also probably right. It probably was just a product of that particular game. I don't expect to see that at Wrexham, and we've never seen that because that was a, you know, these, all the rest of our games are mainly season ticket holders, pretty much sold out. People go to where they normally go. They want to be with the people they're always with. This game obviously clearly was quite exciting. It was pretty empty. Everyone's going mad behind the goal. Yeah, if you're under 30, you're probably going to try and go there just because it's exciting. I wouldn't want to be there whatsoever. I'm thinking I'm going to get bruised, I'm going to get battered, I'm never going to get home, I'm going to lose my shoe.
Yeah, man, it's the mosh pit.
Old man.
If we're talking about this on Monday, then I'm retracting everything.
See, talking of old people doing things and lack of mosh pits, some of us obviously went to see Pulp over the summer, and that was fascinating there because most people there did remember the first time. Most people there were 20-something the first time, which meant they were about 50-something this time. And obviously Jarvis is 60-plus and has an old grey beard that, you know, makes Matt look like a young whippersnapper. But obviously a lot of our fans are rather younger, as we said. Talking of younger fans, we'll take a little break now and listen in to a recording I made last week with a guy called Matt Jones. This is our latest view from the North Stand, where we engage with fans from the team we're out to play. This is Matt Jones from the Racecourse Ramble, who's a Wrexham fan. I managed somehow to find a modest Wrexham fan who actually is not necessarily talking up his team's prospects so much as the rest of the media may be, and is not quite so much of an arrogant team. I did record it with Matt before they played franchise in their first game, unfortunately. So let's have a listen in to Matt the Racecourse Ramble. Welcome to the latest view from the North Stand, where we talk to a representative of the team we're about to play. Today we're talking to Matt Jones from the Racecourse Ramble, which is a Wrexham podcast. Obviously, Wrexham are the first league opponents that we have in the league, and Wrexham are back in the Football League, so congratulations to them. And Matt is actually joining me from a sun-kissed holiday in Egypt. So appreciate you joining me, Matt, and welcome to the Same Old Wombles.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be asked. And even though I could be by a pool right now, you know, cooling off, I'd much rather be talking to you about football, obviously, than about Wrexham.
Good man indeed. Okay, so let's dive straight in. Is the hype on the pitch about Wrexham in League Two this season fully justified?
I guess it depends how you define the hype, doesn't it? To be fair, you know, we've come off the back of a record-breaking season in the National League of 111 points, unbeaten at home. And I think, you know, we've got the majority of that squad is going to be the same, if not virtually identical, by the time we play you. We have just brought in one player so far this season. So that continuity, I think, is obviously going to stand us in good stead in that that early season. The unknown quantity for us will be what's the level against you guys, as opposed to playing some of the top National League sides. Now, obviously, the off-the-cuff remark is always that there's not much between those divisions. But that remains, you know, what's the reality? And I think that's what we need to see. But, you know, we've prepared a League One squad, in effect, I think, over the last 18 months. So I think, you know, that'll stand us in a good stead. But listen, nobody with any sense thinks we're just going to turn up and walk this league. I think the most sensible fans think the best case scenario is we'll get promoted via hook or by crook. So that's my opinion.
Good man, and modest to start with, which is always a sensible trait, I think, in coming into any new league. So you're a lifelong Wrexham fan, from what I understand, man and boy, as they say. As a lifelong Wrexham fan, you know.
Can you hear me?
Do you love the whole Hollywood glamour stuff, or would you rather just hope for a quiet life and let people just get on with supporting the local team?
No, I think we had that for long enough. And obviously, eventually that can lead you into trouble. So listen, I mean, it's bonkers. You know, we're playing, obviously, MK Dons at home on Saturday. The latest rumours are that Hugh Jackman will be there with Ryan Reynolds because they've been filming before the strikes have kicked in Hollywood. You know, we had Will Ferrell there last year. We had Paul Rudd. So it is bonkers. It's bonkers, but it's bonkers in a good way. You know, a lot of people forget that Wrexham did suffer for a long time. And so I think, you know, a little bit of reward with a bit of Hollywood stardust doesn't go amiss. So no, I enjoy it as long as I think we just have to stay grounded as fans and people who are sort of making media content. We just have to make sure we stay a bit grounded with it and not, you know, rub people's noses the wrong way who are perhaps, you know, out of clubs that are struggling. So I love it. I've got a 14-year-old son and you can't believe what's going on, you know.
Whereas my two 16-year-olds have seen us play in League One and in League Two the last few years and are much more attuned to struggling and failure, unfortunately.
Normality. No, that's normality, though, isn't it? That's the reality.
You are quite right. So you've kind of answered it already, but I guess it's maybe therefore not inevitable that you're going to storm through the leagues, but every pre-season prediction thing I've read online anywhere on Twitter has got Wrexham either automatically promoted or at the very least in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think a bit of clickbait that. I don't know if you agree. Wrexham drives a lot of traffic at the moment. So if you either criticise it or get behind it, I think it's probably good for your views and your hits and your clicks and your engagement. But I'm quite a pessimistic fan. So I think I'm quite realistic, and I think I'm adamant that Wrexham would be delighted if they could somehow go up this season. I don't think they'll storm the league. I think that's arrogant to think that myself personally. But I think we'll have a good run because we have got a you know, you might not be au fait with all our players because we've been out in the National League, but you'll learn. We have got good, you know, some good League One, League Two players in our squad. That squad is full of, you know, probably, you know, I think it's a top four side. But then also we're going to be missing one of our key players in the fact that Paul Mullin obviously has punctured his lung and cracked his ribs. So, you know, we've got some niggles to iron out, haven't we?
Yeah, that sounded like a horrific injury for Mullin. I guess, again, talking of what the expectations are for Wrexham, we're almost expecting someone of similar lower league caliber to be signed up as Mullin's replacement.
I'm not sure. I mean, we've got Ollie Palmer. We got Sam Dolby last year from Southend, who replaced Palmer for the last third of the season. And then there was rumours that Mullin was struggling a little bit with a knee injury, so we brought in Billy Waters from Barrow. But Waters played 30 or 40 minutes, played next to nothing in the running. Because obviously Mullin made it through. He was fit enough. So we saw next to nothing of Waters. But then this week, there's been sort of quotes from Phil Parkins said we were looking to bring in a striker anyway. And we've been linked with Norwood. So, you know, it feels a bit late in the week for it potentially to happen, especially, you know, we've been in America and they've been doing nothing supposedly while they were in America. So it feels a bit late in the week now for anything to happen. But you don't know, do you? You know what it's like in football. You could put social media on later and all of a sudden you've signed somebody. But we're obviously in a very lucky position that we've got money. So we can, if something's available, they can do it. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if something happened. But again, how quickly can that player integrate in, you know, by the time we play you guys, he'd have had what, a week's training, you know, that's undue pressure to be putting on somebody to sort of, you know, be a Paul Mullin replacement in it, in fairness.
Well, there are 28 days left in the transfer window as we record this, so who knows what might happen in the interim. Bearing in mind your sensible, level-headed approach to things, who would you say then are you tipping? Who else are you tipping to do well in League Two?
I think Gillingham feels like one that could be up there. They seem to be doing some decent business. I think Notts County will be up there. I know probably a lot of you guys are thinking that that two National League clubs probably be a bit ambitious, but again, Notts County were built for that league really, and they play some really good football. So I think they're going to be there or thereabouts as well. But Gillingham are the ones for me at the moment. I think they seem to be recruiting quite well, and I just, you know, they just seem to be in a strong place. So they're the ones I think that might be the front runners.
Good to know. Okay, so I'm just going to throw some quick fire things at you now, and all you need to do is just tell me the first thing that comes into your head when I mention these things. All right?
This could be interesting, this, Mark.
Okay, so let's start off with a really straightforward one with Phil Parkinson.
Legend now. Yeah, he proved
himself. You could say that about everybody, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, I don't think Wrexham could. We've had some terrible managers. But I think he did really. I mean, do you want one word or do you just want one line? What do you want?
One sentence, yeah.
Prove the doubt was wrong, because there was a time where people were on his back a bit.
Like all managers. Okay, welcome to Wrexham, the TV show.
I think that's fantastic insight into the community element of a lower league football club.
Okay, switching up a little bit, Shrewsbury Town.
I don't hate them as much as Chester.
It was going to be Shrewsbury or Chester. I wasn't sure which one to use.
Chester are the ones, because technically, you might not realise this, technically they are kind of, the majority of their stadium is in Wales, and obviously Wrexham is a Welsh club. I think that's the more bitter rivalry, is how I would say it.
Excellent. Okay. Ollie Palmer?
Changed our season when he joined, to be fair, in that January. But as I said, last half of last season fell off and got replaced in the team. So, but he might be out, if Mullin's not playing, he might be out for revenge.
And I suspect he'll get some pantomime villain booing.
Yeah,
type stuff,
I can imagine that. I can imagine. But to be fair, I mean, it sounded like Wrexham were able to do a really good financial deal for him. I mean, what do you do? You know, I don't think he was. It sounds he's gone on record, to be fair, publicly, and said he didn't want to leave Wimbledon, and he turned us down, I believe, the first time or two times we asked for him. So you know, he didn't really want to go.
No, I have heard that, and ultimately the deal he was offered was something that we were not in a position to offer. But
yeah,
as it's just the black and white of it is, we were a struggling League One team. We sold our centre forward, replaced him with an absolute numpty, and got relegated. So that's not going to play well
with
the fans.
Did you? I don't think. Yeah. So I understand that.
Okay, and your final obvious one, Ryan Reynolds.
He's my hero because I'm a big movie fan anyway. You see, so I was more familiar with Ryan than I was with Rob. So for me, the fact that I can go to a game and almost wave at him, you know, it's bonkers, really, isn't it? I think he's thoroughly. What people don't realise, him and Rob do so much. You don't realise the donations they make into people behind the scenes, you know, to good causes, to people who are not well. What they've done with some players that have not been well, you know, some of the financial support they've been giving out supposedly to families and to help. So, yeah, I love Ryan. He's a legend.
Didn't expect you to say anything different, to be fair. Okay, we could wax lyrical for ages, but the final thing I'll ask you is quick match prediction for the game coming up.
So I think it's going to be a tough game. I think we'll draw. It's awkward for us. We don't know, you know. I don't know how we'll react to not having Mullin. We'll be very reliant on Elliot Lee, who was really influential for us last year. Really pulls the strings in sort of midfield. We tried playing him up front while we were in America. Didn't quite work. So it's going to be interesting to see what team we put out. It's, you know, it's hard unless you know what's going on. But I'll take an away draw all day. I'm sure you're confident of upsetting the apple cart, but I'd be quite happy with an away draw.
Well, I'm an old school Wimbledon fan, man and boy, and therefore upsetting the apple cart, beating, you know, Liverpool and whoever else it was in the Premier League, that was my childhood and young adulthood. I would go for a score draw. We've got 8 or 9 new players that will feature in the starting 11, and therefore you're never quite sure how that's all going to gel together.
Yeah.
We're much more confident in the lonely keeper. We've got Alex Bass from Sunderland, so fingers crossed that will go well. Okay, let's leave it at that. Thank you very much to Matt Jones from Racecourse Ramble. Listen out to Racecourse Ramble, and good luck to Wrexham for the rest of the season, especially for your opening home game against that team in Buckinghamshire. Please trust them wholeheartedly, and then obviously give us the 3 points when you come down to play our lane. Much obliged.
Thanks, Mark. No problem.
And we're back. Thank you to Matt from the Racecourse Ramble, who joined us from his holiday in Egypt. And we wish Wrexham the very best after we play them, of course.
With the Wrexham game,
we wish them really the very best.
What are you talking about?
No, we're not going to wish them the best. But anyway, right, the Wrexham game, right? So the Disney Plus thing, is there going to be like a media circus coming on Saturday? Like, yeah. How does it work? Like, it what must happens? Be. Is there going to be like a whole crew just following? I mean, Hugh Jackman was at the last game, wasn't he? So are we going to get some surprise celebrity coming?
My understanding is they are filming Deadpool 3 at the moment in the UK. And Hugh Jackman's in it as Wolverine, and therefore Reynolds and Jackman are filming together, which is why he turned up. John Green is definitely coming because he's been tweeting.
Oh, yeah, I saw. Yes, I heard that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, so it's funny you say that because I didn't know Deadpool 3 was. I didn't know Wolverine was in Deadpool, but that's a bit. I should probably know that stuff. Anyway, but Wolverine's the best character that Hugh Jackman's been. And I was like, oh, and my dad was joking that he's going to take the seat that is never occupied next to him. I said, no, if Wolverine is sitting next to your dad, then we are swapping seats, but I doubt it.
I love the fact that a lot of people are going there with this whole Starstruck thing. When our cast, for the actors in the cast, we were talking about getting them together to come along to a match. I can't remember what game we've sorted out now, some point in October. They're going to come along and, do a little tour. And one of them, the actors was going, I really want to come along to the Wrexham game. Like we're going to run in, like people are going to run into Ryan Reynolds or Hugh Jackman and they're suddenly going to go.
Talent spotting.
Yeah, it's like, you know.
Well, the reality is, if they come to the game, they have to walk through the main front of the stadium. By the club shop, into the reception, and then even if they get the lift, they're going to be in a public area for a certain period of time. That's what Fashanu did when he came. I'm not saying Fashanu and Ryan Reynolds are the same star ilk at all. They'll take selfies.
You think that would happen, do you, Mark? You don't think that the car will go down the side entrance where the players go in and they'll be ushered up secretly in the lift at the back?
I don't know.
They're seeing the public. Absolutely no way.
Watch
so what we're trying to say, people, if you're listening for whatever reason and you're gonna try and tell up to Wrexham game to see these, you're not gonna see them. All right. Don't do it.
What you need to do if you're going to the Wrexham game is get a seat near me, Matt, and Adam, and you get to see Joe Armstrong, son of Alan, or sometimes Joe Shearing, who also sits near us sometimes. So those two, far better legends than some like souped up Hollywood loser who happens to be throwing loads of money against on an unsustainable dream. But, you know, that's me just saying something completely different.
So Wrexham, the unsustainable dream on the pitch. Last season, they seemed to play a bit of a Kevin Keegan Newcastle type football. I didn't really matter how many goals they conceded because they would always score more. Then they got into the reality of league football, and got absolutely gubbed by the franchise. Not that we're ever going to give franchise any praise at all, because they never deserve any, but they did score 5 goals. Wrexham scored 3 and had 20-odd shots, but they seem to be playing wing-back football without any cause for defence, with an old-school long-throw merchant that puts Rory Delap to shame. So what do we think of our prospects on the pitch?
I think it's going to be a bit of an upset for us because my pie aren't there.
No, I think they will be, won't they?
My pie, I've heard they're not going to be there still. So unless that decision has been reversed, I think that's probably the bit that's going to be the most controversial part of the game. In terms of the match itself, I've no idea how it's going to play out. I don't, you know, we've got a new team, basically. We've just come off the back of probably one of our best victories for several seasons. That we just need to see how we're going to fare up. So I don't know. So for me, in all those circumstances, when I'm left with having to speculate on how we're going to do, which I hate doing because I'm always still getting it wrong, I have to always go back to the fact that it probably have to be the Argentinian sandwich because that's really good.
There's a whole hoo-ha on the My Pie thing. So my understanding is that they were given the Tuesday as the date for the game. And then on the Wednesday, were given, and it was just all of a bit of a shambles. But I think there's such an outcry from fans that I'm hoping someone from whoever did that needs to make a full apology, because I know the fact they are one of the big reasons why fans go. I mean, like, it's a brilliant food provision. They'll be really upset if My Pie aren't there. They were without doubt player of the season last season.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing I read was that My Pie said they got a call from the club, said they were cancelled in the afternoon of the Wednesday. But then I've also heard the thing about that they were told it was a Tuesday, not a Wednesday game. But I understand they are having conversations with the club again, because, you know, and also that someone had said, you know, had they lost any revenue from that happening? And they said they hadn't, because they'd be able to shift the stuff they'd prepared to some of their other venues. So it sounded like it was okay. But then My Pie on social media is also pretty edgy as well. So I was just like, what's going on? I was just trying to find out whether they were going to be there. But like I've said to you guys, My Pie lost it for me since they have stopped having the vegan filling option from I don't know what point in the season. So, you know, I'm just hoping there's going to be some other vegan. But also there's something about a blue, well, Mark will know this because he was there. There's something about a blue kiosk or a blue box or something that's taken up some of the space at the back. Is that right?
There was another vendor that I haven't seen before who was at last night's game. I don't know what they were selling. Perhaps they were selling some vegetarian things. Talking of vegetarian things and vegan options, we didn't want to skirt over the fact that in the last week or so, Mr. Alfie the Trialist, as dubbed by Alex at the beginning of last season, has moved on. Alfie Bendel is no more and has joined the vegan universe at Forest Green Rovers. How do we feel about that?
It's fine.
Yeah, I'm not bothered. I'm just wondering whether he's a vegan or not. That was bad. That was about as far as it went for me.
He's going to be now.
I mean, Forest Green Rovers are a very interesting club, and Dale Vince is like a fascinating character. So just be, you know, just in terms of, I mean, this is also the person who had the first woman head coach for about 3 days. So I'm always slightly sceptical about what Dale's up to. But, you know, fine for Alfie, off he goes. If it wasn't part of Jackson's plans, I'm happy with that. Jackson's basically torn up the team. He's basically looked at a lot of people that had confidence issues over the last couple of seasons, and hopefully he's brought in a whole load of people that haven't got that baggage that we've been lumbered with for a long time. You know, I think that's really, really significant. So Alfie, off you go, mate.
I think my understanding also was he was higher paid players. So to get him off the books, I think, was something that we were looking to do.
We've said before, and we'll have to say it again going through the season, there are a legacy of things on and off the pitch that Danny on the commercial side and Craig on the playing side, together with Johnny and his coaches, are having to work their way through. JJ and Craig have ripped up that team and rebuilt a team, and a result like the Coventry win this week in the Cup will go some way to actually restoring some faith that the fans have in the team and that the team has in itself. And if the team does not now represent, much as we love the likes of Will Nightingale, for example, but if it the team does not represent a group of individuals that are used to losing, and sadly, unfortunately, almost accepted that losing, then so much the better, as far as I'm concerned. We'll just create some new folk heroes, which is great to see. So, fingers crossed, then Wrexham will be an exciting game. And the score prediction I gave when I spoke to the Wrexham fan of 2-2 will be where we end up. So, I'm going to wrap it up there with our final odd one out quiz, which now we can do with all three of you, because we've all managed to get you guys on the pod together for a change. So we're doing exactly what we did last week, straightforward scenario, whereby I give you four names of Wimbledon players. And what you have to do is tell me who the odd one out is from those players. If, of course, I can find the right document.
Okay, so whilst...
I've got it. I've got it. We're organised. So let's start with Matt. Matt's four players are Lyle Taylor, Jack Kerry, Ali Alhamady, and Joe Piggott. Who is the odd one out of those four?
Jack Curry. The others all play up front. End of. It's done it. I've won. 10 points. Move on.
Never the simple answer. You should know by now.
But that's right, isn't it, though?
The odd one out is Jack Curry because he's the only one named after a food substance.
All your answers are always amusing and interesting, but never quite exactly what it should be.
No.
They're not the answer that Mark has.
Both Niall and I are right. We're both right, aren't we?
Is it Ali because the other three all dye their hair?
It is Ali, but not for that reason.
What? They dye their hair?
That's bizarre. Okay.
Did they all join at the same time or something like that? Were they signed contracts with us at the same time?
I'll put you out of your misery. The reason the odd one out is Ali, although he was top goal scorer last season, he didn't score on his debut. Joe Piggott scored on his debut, signed from Maidstone. Lyle Taylor scored a hat-trick on his debut in a pre-season friendly. And Jack Curry scored on his debut against Gillingham beginning of last season.
Whoa. Hold on. Wait a second. Jack Curry play any friendlies?
Competitive professional games.
Oh, but Lyle Taylor scored a hat-trick on his debut in a friendly, you said. So you've got it wrong. I've got it right.
Team?
I've got the question right. You've got it wrong.
Okay. Niall's four are Dean Holdsworth, Aaron Presley, Nathan Young-Coombs, and Matthew Cox.
Is this the same thing as Matt? Like Matthew Cox, a goalie?
No.
So Dean Holdsworth, right?
Yes.
Brentford.
Yes. Aaron Presley.
Brentford.
Nathan Young-Coombs.
Brentford.
Matt Cox.
Gone to Brentford, the other way around.
Yes. Like Matt said.
That wasn't the reason, but I'll give you that, actually.
No, because he's going to make something up.
No, I'll make something up. Something up.
I can do it. It's Matthew Cox because the others aren't named after an apple.
Very good.
Aaron Presley, because he's the only one named after like a famous 1950s rock star.
It is Matthew Cox. The reason it's Matthew Cox is because Dean Holdsworth played for Brentford and came to us. Aaron Presley played for Brentford and came to us. Nathan Young-Coombs played for Brentford and came to us. Matthew Cox never played for us in the first team and still has not played for Brentford.
Well, that's just
he's not bad.
That's pretty much the answer I gave, to be honest.
Pretty much, I said Brentford. Did I not say Brentford at the start?
Yeah.
Brentford.
Yeah, because he hasn't played for them. Okay, Adam.
Oh, my word.
Good luck, mate. Good luck, my friend, because you've literally got to be in Mark's head. And that is, God knows where that is.
Adam four are Will Nightingale, Zach Robinson, Nick Zanoff, and Morgan Williams. And no, it's not that one of them's a goalkeeper.
Is it one of them's Welsh?
This is Adam.
Scottish.
Who was the Williams, the last one?
Scottish clubs.
Will Nightingale, Zach Robinson, Nick Zanoff, and Morgan Williams.
Oh, Morgan.
Scottish clubs. Mate.
I've written them down because I knew that I'd forget instantly. It's got to be something to do with Scottish clubs, surely.
Nothing to do with Scottish clubs.
What? But Robinson and Nightingale are both at Scottish clubs.
Yeah, that's
clubs.
Two. Zanoff. There's only one odd one out, otherwise it wouldn't work as a game.
It's a 2-1 out.
No, it's an odd one out.
And it's not because Zanoff's the goalie. Okay.
Is it
that last Friday all of them had an fish and
haggis
chips, apart from Zanoff, who had a curry? Is that the odd one out?
They all like Gogglebox, apart from Nick Zanoff, who likes
Yeah.
It's supposed to be something about their football. I know that much.
It is something about their football. I don't know why these people are trying to.
Apart from Zane.
Zane, who's left-footed, and the rest are right-footed.
Okay.
Is Morgan Williams the odd one out?
Because he's Welsh.
Is Morgan Williams the odd one out?
He's Welsh.
No. Okay. Where do we sign Morgan Williams from?
Wales.
I don't know, but for some reason he seems like he's different to all the rest.
Okay. Where did we sign Will Nightingale from?
It's an academy.
These are academy players.
Okay. Which one is not an academy player?
Zanoff.
Correct. Jesus.
He's the goalkeeper. He's the one out.
Speed you the answers.
He's a goalkeeper. He's a keeper.
But it worked.
He's a goalkeeper. From academy.
It's all goalkeeper.
And he loves Love Island. That's it.
The worst thing about this, though, is that my... The worst thing about this is in the pod last week, my answer last week was something to do with the academy. Mark is probably actually doing me a favour here and trying to give me last week's answer, and I should have realised. I should just say the same thing every week.
You're right. That's where we are, gentlemen. I think we can leave it at that. You've all been, as usual, utterly fabulous. Happy birthday to Niall, and big up the Dons. And we will play you out with a little bit of the potential new theme tune as made up in the last 24 hours for the new folk hero on the left wing, Mr. Ryan McLean. We've been the same at Wombles. You can find us on every place you can find any sensible podcast. Thank you and good night.